the drum kit was the first thing when you walked into the room. That's the first thing you saw. And apparently it was the first thing I saw too. And remember, my head height is, I wasn't very tall.
Yeah.
So my head height was probably the snare drum, was probably here, hi-hat, and that was it.
Hello and welcome to this special Tama Drum Festival episode of Bum Zack. My name is Sascha Madsen and I speak with drummers on my podcast. My guest today is Simon Phillips. We talk about how he started playing drums, about paradiddles and humor. Have fun!
Bum Zack, der Schlagzeuger-Podcast von Sascha Madsen. Unterstützt von Tama.
Hello, Simon.
Hello.
Such an honor to have you in my podcast. Thank you.
Thank you. My pleasure. Yeah. Yeah.
We are here today to celebrate 50 years of Tama drums.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to perform on stage tonight. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone is really looking forward to it.
Great. Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to it too, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit of you and your drum history and your history with Tama. I read in the internet that you came in touch with the drums when you were 3 years old through your father, Sid. Is it true?
Absolutely, yep.
Okay, how did it happen?
So he used to rehearse the band at the house, you know, our house. I guess before I was about 3.5 years old, I didn't really make sense of it. But also they were rehearsing in this little room, which was called the studio actually, but it was just like a conservatory. Yeah. But the piano was in the main room of a living room, and the drummer was kind of, I couldn't really see. I'm only that tall. You know, I'm only just started walking, right?
Yeah.
So all I saw were these beautiful brass instruments: the baritone, alto, tenor, and bass. But it didn't really make any impact at that point. And then, I guess when I was, well, this would have been 1960 then, he decided he got a new drummer, but he also, I think it was difficult to rehearse because it was small, plus the piano was in the other room. And so he must have done a deal with my mom to use the living room.
Yeah, right? Okay.
And he turned the band around, mainly because the piano was down there. He put the drums right, the drum kit was the first thing when you walked into the room. That's the first thing you saw.
Okay.
And apparently it was the first thing I saw too. And remember, my head height is, wasn't very tall.
Yeah.
So my head height was probably the snare drum, was probably here, hi-hat, and that was it.
Yeah.
And he is a beautiful drummer. His name is Dave Rogers, and I knew him for quite a few years after that.
Yeah.
The sound of that Ludwig 400 Superphonic, the hi-hat going up and down, and his beautiful, crisp way he played.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
That was it. That was it.
Nice. You got your own drum set when you were six. Is it true?
Well, kind of.
Kind of.
My mom bought me a toy kit, like a blue toy kit.
Like this Mickey Mouse kits from Toys R Us.
Mickey Mouse, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, I don't know what it was. It was, we call it Mickey Mouse when it's not very good. You know?
Ah, okay.
It wasn't, you know, it didn't have ears, no. And I was about four. That only lasted a few weeks. And then I think I got a little bit older than that. I got just my mom bought me a snare drum with an attached cymbal.
Yeah.
And that's all I had.
Ah, okay.
Until I was 8 years old.
Oh, okay.
And then that's when I got my first actual drum kit.
And you took lessons then too?
No.
Oh, okay.
See, the funny thing was, One of the drummers that used to play with my dad, he played with him actually way back, like in the 30s, 40s, and then, of course, 50s and early 60s. He became a drum teacher.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he became probably the most famous drum teacher in London at the time.
Oh, okay.
Everybody went to him.
Okay.
Phil Collins went to him, Neil Wilkinson, load of drummers, but people I don't even know, you know. His method of teaching was very odd.
Oh, why?
Yeah. He would just give a chart and a tape machine and a funky old Premiere kit with mold growing out of it. And he'd start the tape machine and then he'd leave.
What?
Okay, so we play along and try to read a chart. But the whole point of going to him was to learn to read.
Ah, okay.
But he never actually taught me how to read. He just said, just play. Go on.
Okay.
Do it. And I'd stop because I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. And then he'd come up and say, why'd you stop? I said, well, I can't read this bit. And he goes, all right. Goes like this. I mean, it was a very strange method he had, but it somehow worked.
Okay.
And the reason I believe it worked is because they were real music charts. He did write a drum book with all the rudiments and all that mm-hmm. stuff, and mm-hmm. I had no time for it at all. Because I learned by playing to records.
Yeah.
I wanted to play music.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I kind of say to people, you know, I learned to play music before I learned to play drums.
Oh, okay.
It's a different... I grew up always playing tunes and arrangements, song form. That's really what I learned first. My rudiments were terrible. I had a bit of a technique, but it was only later when I realized how important that was that I started doing that. But
Do you think it was harder for you to learn the techniques afterwards? Or would it have been easier?
It came very naturally.
Okay,
actually.
Cool.
Yeah, it was fun. It's just I didn't know really what they were. The importance to me was I needed music.
Mm-hmm.
I also needed harmony. I needed to play cool music, cool songs, you know? And I used to play along to Count Basie, all big band, mainly big band.
Okay.
But I used to also play with the Beatles and the Kinks.
Oh, cool.
Dave Brubeck, you know, Take Five when I was like really small and whenever that came out.
Yeah.
There's this one story when I'm actually later on, I'm playing with my dad, and I was probably 12 or 13.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing a gig, and I'm setting up my drum kit. And there's another band that's on, so they would be the support band. And this guy came up to me and said, oh, you're setting up your dad's drums. I went, no, I'm setting up my drums.
Yeah.
Because I kind of took, offense at that.
Yeah.
And he goes away, and I'm putting some cymbals up, and he comes back with a pair of sticks. He goes, play me a paradiddle. I don't know what a paradiddle is. And he just laughed and walked away. The next time I saw him, they played a set, and the next time I saw him, we were playing charts and everything. I saw him in the wings, and he's going like, he can't even play a paradiddle yet. He's playing with this big band. You know, it's a medium-sized band.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So I had a very different kind of start.
Yeah, okay. You know? That's really funny because when I was a kid, I learned to play paradiddles because a video of you, where you explained the paradiddles.
Well,
it's a full circle moment. Oh my God.
It was later when I realized, you know, I went back to that book and actually started, you know, making a lot more sense out of it. And also making them work in a musical context.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's always been like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember the video, if I saw it yesterday, it was a really big stage and you were standing in front, in the middle of the stage just with a snare drum.
Yeah.
And it was perfect for me at this age to learn.
Yeah. I mean, it's very, very important. It's just that I never went to school. I mean, I went to school, but I never went to drum school.
Yeah.
I was totally self-taught. And then the teacher, when I was 8 years old, started to, you know, I started to learn to read music.
Mm-hmm.
And also my dad, I mean, he was doing arrangements all the time. As soon as he did arrangement, he'd give me the drum chart.
Wow. That's cool.
And I didn't have the music to play along with it,
but
I read the chart.
And you had to imagine the music.
Yeah, I was just reading the chart, just reading it down. But what I got used to was reading, something for the first bar, and then sim, dot, 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 or et cetera for seven bars,
mm-hmm.
and then letter C, letter B, coda, sign.
Okay.
I got to learn to read the map.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it was. I knew the style. I knew what it had to be. He actually often wrote a lot of detail in, mm-hmm. too. But this was... It wasn't super complex because a lot of it was cut common.
Okay.
And do you know what that is, cut common?
No.
Okay, so you have a C at the start of a stave, right? And that's 4-4.
Yeah.
But in jazz and quicker jazz, you actually count it as 2. It's like 2-4.
Yeah, okay. Oh. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, okay.
It's actually you're reading it as 1-2. Like this.
It's a
cut common chart, you know.
Okay.
So that's why I say I learned to kind of play music before kind of, you know.
And
it was a very unusual, very lucky entrance into playing.
Yeah.
Professionally, you know.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, just a bit different, that's all.
Yeah, cool. When did you know that you will make it for your life to play drums?
I was 3 and a half years old.
Okay. Yeah.
I had no concept of what that really meant,
yeah.
But I knew in my head what I was going to do for the rest of my life. Yeah.
That's pretty
amazing. Didn't think about it because a kid doesn't think like that.
Yeah.
But there was just no looking back.
Okay.
That's all I knew how to do, really.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't particularly brainy at school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wasn't very clever with that. I loved playing cricket. That was the only sport really I was any good at. Tennis I wasn't bad at, but cricket is something you play in England. You know, and I loved it. Absolutely loved it. So,
yeah.
And could have gone. Well, I never would have been professional. Wasn't good enough. But I did go into the Colts. County courts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I found it. Oof, this is pretty hard, you know. And the ball starts getting quicker too.
Yeah,
and it's a heavy
you
know, cricket, so you have to be very careful with your fingers. You
okay,
know? But I loved it.
Okay.
Absolutely loved it. But then that all came to a halt when, you know, as things do. You know?
Yeah. When all the music's things getting serious.
Yeah, yeah.
When did it get serious for you?
Well, it was always serious, but I joined my dad's band in 1969. I was 12 years old and went on the road.
Yeah, and that was it, and you never stopped?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard when I see young children now, a 12-year-old, and I go, did I really do that? But I did. The youngest guy in the band was about 30, and onwards up into the 60s. Some of the horn players were 61, 62 years old, a 50-year-old singer. I mean, my dad was, you know, from when I joined the band, he would have been 61 until 65.
Yeah, okay.
So I was in the band from 12 to 16.
Yeah.
And so I was serious. I was getting paid too.
Yeah, yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I was. And I was paying rent.
Yeah, yeah, really.
My dad would give me a check.
Yeah.
And of course, I couldn't have a bank account in those days. So my mom would deposit it, and then she'd take out like £2.50 for a week's rent.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, it's a fair deal.
You know, her thing was she wanted me to be self-sufficient. She wanted me to understand the reality of what it's like to live.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was already a professional and earning more than my teachers at school, per week, probably, definitely.
Oh,
She wanted to make sure I understood that, you know, you don't get to keep all that money. You got to pay for rent.
Okay, it was that serious. How often did you play with
your father? Two or three nights a week.
Okay, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I missed a lot of school.
Yeah, yeah.
I had to change from, I had to go through two different schools to find one that was, that would put up with it.
Okay, wow.
And the kids, too. It was very interesting. And you know, in England, especially in the 60s, you know, there was a real class system still.
Mm-hmm.
And the first school I went to, you know, was quite a nice, it was a boarding school, it was a prep school, you know. Mm-hmm. I would have gone to public school. I would have gone to Harrow, actually, which is one of the major, you know, public schools.
Yeah.
I didn't want to. And I didn't need to.
Yeah.
Because my dad, it was also, I don't think at the time he could probably really afford it.
Because
they were getting expensive. And, you know, he needed a drummer that could play his music.
Yeah.
And that's the reason I joined, because drummers in 1969, they didn't want to play Benny Goodman music, like 1930s, you know, Gene Krupa style, Dave Tuff, Zutty Singles, you know, that lots of four, you know. They wanted to play like Elvin Jones and Art Blakey. And it would drive him nuts. And then my mom eventually said, look, you've got a perfectly good drummer in this house and he can read music. Time for him to go on the road. And he said, oh, don't be ridiculous. He's 12 years old. And she said, gave him that look. And he went, okay, we'll give it a try. And that's what he did.
Yeah, nice.
He gave me a try and he said, wow, that's it, you know.
Yeah.
But he was very strict. It was a great apprenticeship.
Mm-hmm.
But it was tough.
Yeah.
Because he treated me like a grown-up.
Yeah, okay.
And therefore, he'd treat me like a grown-up in his band that wasn't, you know, doing what he's supposed to be doing.
Mm.
And the rest of the band, a couple of times, it was like...
Okay.
But I was a kid. I didn't really understand. But they were like... wow, okay. And then one of them would go and talk to my father and said, that was a little rough. And but he was tough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was very like Buddy Rich.
Okay. Whew. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So you discovered in your life as a drummer, I think, more than most drummers in this world. And you, there's a lot of influence from you in I think most of the drummers in this world, and you played in so many bands, and it's hard to pick something out from what you did. My question is, how is it to play today at the Tama Drum Festival in front of 1,000 people? And you toured your almost your whole life through the whole world with with any bands and so how is it to play today at the Tama Festival?
How is it?
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be great. Yeah,
that's a great answer.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it doesn't. What I've learned, and especially doing a lot of jazz tours and jazz things, and especially with my own band, you know, back in the 80s, I used to play huge places with The Who, with Jagger, with Jeff Beck, you know, but it's not, life is not all 10,000 seaters.
Yeah.
And actually, there's something really lovely about playing a 200 seater.
Yeah.
You know, as long as the room sounds okay, and it's not a stupid room where, you know, well, sometimes it's like that, but we manage to somehow fit everything in, and sometimes those gigs are the best.
Yeah.
And you get there and you go, oh, really? Oh, man. You know, nothing in the PA. There's just, it's too small.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So we put, you know, maybe a little bit of kick drum in the PA. We put the, you know, a little bit of horn and obviously, you know, the keyboards and stuff. But you have to play. We did a gig the other day, Thursday night in Heinsberg at a school.
Yeah, okay.
And it's that the room is the classical room. It's meant for, you know, not even a full orchestra. I mean, like chamber music.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went, oh boy, this is going to be interesting. So you have to learn how to play quieter.
Yeah.
And you have to learn to play the room.
Yeah.
You know? And playing with Hiromi, for example, that was a great learning curve because there's no guitarist.
Mm-hmm.
Once you take the guitar off the stage, it's amazing how transient everything is.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's nothing being absorbed. So every time you hit a drum, it's like, fuck, it's too loud. You know? So you really have to, you know, you have to learn to play intensely, complicated, but quiet.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And I love doing that. And now my playing has much more dynamics now than it did even 10 years ago.
Okay, wow, cool. Yeah.
Lot of dynamics now. Nice. So and I love that. To me, that's it's a very hard thing to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So but it's lovely. So yeah.
Cool. What are the best jokes on tour? Because you're famous to jokes and to prank your the crew.
I am?
Or yes.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Is that what people say?
Yeah, that's what people say.
Really?
Yeah.
Gosh, I didn't think I was that funny.
But you do jokes and pranks on tour, or do you?
I mean, God, if you've been in this business long enough, you're going to have a sense of humor.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're not going to get through it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I find at this age, I do find things quite funny. And if I'm doing... Like if I'm doing a drum clinic masterclass, I'm very conscious about don't make it too serious.
Mm-hmm.
Make people enjoy it, and I think that's the thing. You know, some people certainly when you start doing clinics, you know, it's nerve wracking. That's the first thing. All these drummer festivals are nerve wracking, and when I meet all the other drummers, I can see them walking around the and, you know, and I know, and I was just like that too.
Mm-hmm.
And my advice is said just. Go out there and do what you do. Not a sport. It's not a competition.
Yeah.
Just do what you're here for a reason.
Yeah.
Somebody asked you to be here, so you've got a damn good reason to be here, right?
You're damn right.
Just don't, you know. And it takes, obviously, it takes a few years. But even presenting a clinic, remember, it's still entertainment.
Mm.
You have an audience there, and they don't want to be going, God, this is boring. You know, like they're getting to the minutiae of the stick and you must hold it over with the name stamp. Because if you don't, it's a different sound.
What?
Right? I mean, shit like that, you know. I'm being facetious, but got to make it fun. and make it entertaining. So at the end of the night, they had a good time.
Yeah.
You know, and they probably, hopefully, learned something too.
Yeah.
And were entertained. But yeah, you gotta, you know, gotta have some levity in life. Otherwise, it's too, you know, it's all too serious. So yeah. I guess I do, but I don't think I'm a prankster. I mean, I used to do shit in hotels years ago, but all sorts of weird things. But yeah.
For example?
Oh, I can't tell you that. I can't divulge. No.
Okay.
No.
Okay, I got you.
Interpol will be after me.
So thank you very much, Simon. I think we're out of time.
Lovely. And okay, thank you.
It was an honor.
Lovely. Thanks.
Have fun tonight on stage. I think we will.
Yep. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, I just hope our monitors are good. We had some issues yesterday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it took a long, long time.
Oh, okay.
I'm like this. Yeah. I'm hoping we're going to be okay. It really shouldn't be that difficult, you know, because I get involved in all the technical side. Mm-hmm. So I plan it so the band is very easy, mm-hmm. actually, to, you know, we have got a big drum kit, of course, but yeah. It's really easy to mix. It's really easy for the monitor guy. We make it so simple, but somebody didn't quite get it.
Okay.
Let's hope.
Let's hope.
Yeah. You'll tell by my expression, which will be up on those screens.
Yeah.
And if I'm looking grumpy, then you know the shit's not.
Okay.
Bad.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Das war Bumzack. Bis zum nächsten Mal.